It is Locked On Jazz for the 4th of September, the same month that training camp opens, the same month that preseason opens. So to kick it off, Kevin Pelton of ESPN joins the summer interview series for a day. It doesn't get bigger than this on Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers about the Jazz. You can get this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or tell your smart speaker to play the podcast Locked On Jazz. How are you? Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you had a great Labor Day. This is like it's starting. The guys will start to funnel into town now. All the college players are off to go play. European players are off to play. So players begin to funnel back into their own towns because their best games are now against their teammates that are in town. Jazz have had many, many players in town for a while. But now the pickup games are kind of back in your hometown. This is pretty universal across the NBA that this happens. And training camp opens less than 3 weeks from now. They'll have their first practice 3 weeks from today. It's in 2 days, 3 weeks from today. It's incredible. Big show. Kevin Pelton's going to join us to talk about my optimism about the team and see whether I'm wrong. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Chevy, by Mazuma USA, and by Intercap Lending. All right, let's get to it. The trade went down the other day. The Rockets traded Ryan Anderson and a hot D'Anthony Melton for Marquise Chris and Brandon Knight. It's a pretty interesting deal. There's a bunch of different ways to look at it, so let's try to take a little bit of a breakdown on it. Let's start with, why would Phoenix possibly do this? And the minute you say that, you're implying that it's a big win for the Rockets, and it may or may not be. They got out from under Ryan Anderson's contract and with Carmelo Anthony. I don't think they could afford that, both of them. So there's probably something there. But from Phoenix's standpoint, they're trying to culturally change who they are. And they've removed Jared Dudley and they've removed Marquise Chris. And they're really trying to get rid of the lack of maturity that they had on their roster and let Igor Kokoschkov try to build this thing with more maturity, professionalism, and get rid of negative influences on the young kids. And so now they move forward with Josh Jackson and Devin Booker and the number one pick of the draft, and they decide to keep Dragan Bender, and we'll see from there. So that's where they go. That's why they did it. Now let's talk about it from a Houston perspective. Did Houston just get considerably better? So it's weird is that a lot of people are saying that the best player in the trade was Melton out of USC. No one knows. He didn't play last year. He's a really nice athlete. He's long. He couldn't shoot at all. He had a decent summer league. If he shoots well, he ends up to be he's going to end up to be a really nice player and a good find. Like, he'll be a rotation player if he shoots, but there's a decent chance that he's not going to be able to shoot. There's not a track record that says that he can shoot, frankly, is the one thing I would say on this. And he's a player, if you remember, I talked about him around the draft. I went back and watched his USC stuff, and I think that it's there's some stuff in there that's really likable. He's 6'4", he's 200 pounds, he's bona fide, but his college career, he shot 44% from the field and 28% from three, and you've got to figure out, you know, whether or not that after a year off because he got caught in the whole FBI scandal, which isn't his fault, I don't mind that at all, he was the 46th pick. I mean, he's not such a no-brainer because, you know, a bunch of teams passed on him. So now let's go to Pac for a second on this because I think Pac gets a little interesting. So from a pack standpoint, Ryan Anderson is a plus 0.6. Ryan Anderson, for his defensive liabilities on an offensive side of things, is pretty good. 39% three-point shooter still, played 66 games last year, is a plus 0.6. At some point, he got characterized negatively, I think, because of his contract. Brandon Knight didn't play last year, so we'll have to dig back a little bit to get a number on him. Marquise Chris is a minus 0.7 pack player. So Houston certainly didn't just get better there. Now, Marquise Chris shoots 29.5% from three, 61% from the free throw line. There's not a lot here that lets you think that he's suddenly going to become a bona fide shooter. Every time we've played him, he has an emotional outburst of some point. So he needs some level of maturity that maybe comes with time. Turns over 16% of the possessions he has the ball. He's young still. He also fits outside of the Gladwellian 10,000 hours. I'm a big believer that when you have a player who you know, he started the old story. Oh, he's a football player and he started young. He didn't really play. Yeah, you know, that one to me never really works. Jordan Hill was that guy for a long time. I think that player has got to learn the game and understand the game, and I'm not sure Marquise Chris has that. Now, maybe Mike D'Antoni's system is going to find something there for him. The year before, Marquise Chris was a minus 0.4. What's interesting is the year before, Dragan Bender was a minus 0.9, and then last year, Dragan Bender was a minus 0.4, so he showed some signs of improvement, which we didn't see out of Marquise Chris. Again, maybe in Houston he gets better. You get nervous about, you know, dismissing a player with that level of draft status, but it might have also been a mistake pick. I always think you have to be really careful. Just because he was a ninth pick doesn't mean that everybody was right on him in that regard. So then there's Brandon Knight, which is a really interesting pickup. So Brandon Knight, so in other words, my point on Marquise Chris is that maybe he clicks in the system, but as of now, moving from Ryan Anderson to Marquise Chris is actually a downgrade for the Rockets. I know everybody, it's a downgrade. Like, Ryan Anderson is an efficient offensive player. Marquise Chris is not. Neither of them are very good defensively. Marquise Chris is a far superior athlete, but I'm not sure that he understands how to play. We'll see. Now, Brandon Knight's really interesting. Because Brandon Knight is 26 years old. That's all. Brandon Knight is 26 years old. Comes off the ACL. I think he can probably still play. And that might be where I think this is a better pickup. But we dig into Brandon Knight a little bit. In the 15-16 season in Phoenix, Brandon Knight was a negative 0.7 pack player. So when people talk about Brandon Knight, they're getting excited about the 15-16 season. He averaged 20 points a game, pretty inefficient. Effective field goal percentage at 48%, league average is 50. Did get 4 rebounds and 5 assists, but he turned it over 3 times. And he was an inefficient offensive player. Like, you go back to his Milwaukee year, where I think he probably made his biggest name, is the 13-14 season. And try to look at what did he do in Milwaukee with his performance when he put up the big numbers, and you see a similar thing. This is an inefficient offensive player. He was his pack that year was minus 0.6. So there's not a track record on Brandon Knight of being an efficient offensive player. His last full season, he played 16-17. We played 50 games. He was a minus 1.1. So Houston just picked up two interesting players who, when you dig inside the numbers a little bit, are both negative players. So I'm not convinced that they got that much better. In fact, I know they got less good from an offensive standpoint because he actually was a pretty good, Ryan Anderson was a pretty good offensive player. The other interesting little news story was Luol Deng. And that's interesting as much because it means the Lakers have cleared a ton of space and now can go get Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, whoever they want in the offseason and are in the forefront of that. The other one on Luol Deng is he's 33 years old, but he has played one game last year and 56 the year before. And I think you have to wonder whether he can still play or not. If you go back to the 15-16 season when he's in Miami playing the four, Luol Deng was a positive pack player at point one. Right? Just right dead even offensive player. That is probably, if you could replicate that, better than what Jay Crowder and Thabo Sefolosha was for the Jazz last year. He's, from a Jazz standpoint, he's the same player. Jay Crowder was a negative 0.6. Thabo was actually a plus 0.5. I take that back. My bad, Thabo. Plus 0.5. Pack player last year. Shot 38% from three. What's interesting about Luol Deng is he really just would replace the Jonas Derebko's position, which George Niang kind of already has. So I don't really know if he fits for the Jazz. But it would be another guy, maybe one too many. But he's not, you know, it's an interesting player. All right, that's enough of that. Let's get to what you want. And that is Kevin Pelton coming up next of ESPN to talk about why Real Plus Minus picked the Jazz second in the West, whether he should quell my optimism about the team. It's a big show with KP coming up right after we mention our sponsors today, which include our friends over at Murdoch Chevy. I'm driving a Chevy right now, a Chevy Equinox, and I just got out of the Chevy Colorado truck. I'm really impressed by how well everything is made. They're both incredibly quiet. Quite honestly, the Equinox I drive more, I have to really be conscious of what I'm driving. It's so smooth. I've got the turbo. It's got a little boost to it, and I'm having a hard time every now and then not being up at the mid 80s coming up parleys and pulling it back down. It's just a solid, smooth ride. Their SUV lineup, you know the Tahoe, and you know the Suburban. The Equinox and the Traverse are super nice with all the bells and whistles on it. The Traverse has some really the latest, greatest, and everything. Super camera system, mirror turns into a backup camera, third row seats up to eight. You can drive it in two-wheel drive and then switch it to all-wheel drive when you want it to, so you get better gas mileage in the meantime. Very impressive lineup all the way across the board from Chevy. Check them off at Murdoch Chevy and Woods Cross and in Logan. Find new roads with Chevy. Stop by and say hi to Tyson when you're there. Today's show is also brought to you by, we welcome back the sponsor, Mazuma USA. So if you're a small business owner and 1 to 5 employees, you're building your company, you want to be awesome. Frankly, the last thing that you want to be doing is doing all your paperwork and taxes and doing all that. Well, guess what? Mazuma's got the answer for you. It's pretty awesome. They will take your company and in one easy step, you send all your statements and documents to Mazuma and you're done. And they start off at $75 a month. They will do all of your financing for you. $75 a month. They will do all of your paperwork, all of your taxes for you. No contract, cancel any time, no hidden fees, one flat rate, locally based company. Pretty impressive. Call and schedule your free consultation, 801-988-5354. That's 801-988-5354, 801-988-5354, MazumaUSA.com. And now, the fabulous Kevin Pelton. Kevin Pelton, a national expert for the Jazz Summer Interview Series. Because I'm uncomfortable, Kevin Pelton. I'm very, very uncomfortable. And I need your help.
Of course.
I'm pretty optimistic about the Jazz, and that's not my natural way I exist. I generally go the other way with things. I seem to try to poke holes in things. So I need to find out where my optimism is real and where it is not. Can you help me with this on this edition of Locked on Jazz on the Summer Interview Series?
I mean, you know, I'd like nothing more than crushing people's optimism. So, of course, I would be happy to do it.
Oh, that's right, because you're such a mean guy. All right, first of all, why the heck did you give us a C-?
I mean, I think if you look at my expectations for what the Jazz were going to do this offseason, what they actually did was pretty similar, with the exception of the fact that I think Derek Favors and Dante Exum probably got more money on their contracts than I would have expected. So, you know, as I laid out in the grading rubric, if you did exactly as expected, that to me would be a C off season. And so if you did slightly worse than in terms of those contracts, and then, you know, maybe also the fact that they did not specifically find a stretch four option at any point this offseason, which, you know, I think would have been an expectation after Jonas Jerebko's contract was not guaranteed. I mean, you know, maybe George Niang ends up being that guy. But, you know, it wasn't kind of the veteran addition in that role that I think is the one thing you would have looked at and said, hey, there's a weakness that they might try to fill this offseason.
One more question on that. Derek, I think it's a fair comment if someone says that Derek Favors and Dante Exum seem to get paid more than their market value. There's an underlying reason for each of them that makes it explainable. In the case of Derek, his role is unique and maybe not as desirable in Utah. And Dante, you're trying to sign him to a 3-year deal because you want his development to happen under you, and so you may have to overpay. When that money couldn't have been spent anywhere else, really, right? They didn't go over the luxury tax. They weren't going to be able to probably spend that money on any other player. Is it a downside issue to overspend a little bit on your player if it's not money that could be used other places?
I think it's much less of an issue with Favors because of the fact that, you know, it is a 1-year deal. And part of what they were buying, surely, with the contract at that price is the ability to get a non-guaranteed second year, which, you know, obviously is much more favorable for the Jazz than it is for Derek Favors. In Exum's case, it probably has more long-term ramifications because of the fact that, you know, if unfortunately he, you know, his development doesn't progress the way that Jazz hope it does, and he continues to be kind of the, you know, third or fourth guard that he's been when healthy the last couple of seasons, then you are probably paying him a substantial amount more than he's worth, and that will start to cut into your cap space next summer in particular.
From a project, how do you project guys that are oft injured?
I mean, you know, in terms of the RPM projections that I do, you know, the games played in there is based on games missed the previous seasons, based on previous 3 seasons, you know, based on historically kind of how games missed over that span has translated into how many you're going to miss in the following season. So, you know, that affects Exum's projection in terms of, you know, how will finally having an healthy offseason allow him to expand his game. That one is much more difficult to model.
All right, let's go into some of these. Let's start with the big picture. You did your real plus minus projections, and you surprised a lot of people and had the Jazz projected as the second team in the Western Conference, which with a grand total of 0.4 wins more than the Houston Rockets. So it obviously wasn't by a ton. But what was it that you see in the Jazz, and also that you're projecting them at 53 wins, which is considerably more than I think the Vegas over-under has. What is it that you're seeing there?
Yeah, I mean, I was a little surprised that the Vegas line came in as low as it is because it's pretty much right where the Jazz finished last season, right?
48.5, right, yep.
Yeah, and, you know, given that the Gobert injury, how well they played with him in the lineup, and then after the Jay Crowder addition, I mean, I think that my, you know, default expectation for the Jazz, even before running these RPM projections, is that, you know, they'd probably be a little bit better than last season, that they wouldn't continue to play at the same level that they did, you know, after the trade deadline because of the fact that, you know, there was probably some fluky elements in terms of you were healthier than expected in that span with Gobert playing all of those games generally. And then, you know, the opponent 3-point shooting, as we've discussed on this podcast many times, was probably going to be difficult for them to sustain at the level that, you know, it was during the winning streak in particular, although it started to even out after that. So, you know, I think I would have probably said 50 to 51 would probably have been, you know, kind of my subjective guess. As to why RPM ended up higher, I mean, I think a lot of it speaks to, you know, kind of Utah's depth and, you know, projection like this. Part of what people think of in their head, I think, when they do projections for teams is they don't think about what's kind of the average outcome for that team. They think about what's the most likely outcome for that team. And there's a difference between those two things. because the most likely outcome is probably, you know, some injuries, but not that many. Whereas, you know, if you're healthier than that, you can only go up so much. But there's scenarios where, you know, injuries can really hit a team quite hard and ruin their season, like we saw with, say, Memphis last year. And then you go potentially all the way down to the bottom. So if you kind of account for all those possibilities and take the average of them, it's almost always going to be lower than the median projection. And I think that's, you know, kind of something that so that is a scenario that kind of emphasizes depth over the star quality of teams in some ways.
That one's going to have people trying to figure out what you just said. Like that, I got it. But that's a pretty deep thought right there, right? That likely, I mean, that's part and of average why, aren't the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of why I think that, you know, besides for the fact that fans are generally going to be optimistic about their own teams, I mean, I think even people who are kind of looking at it objectively are usually going to pick a higher number of wins for their team than the projections or the Vegas line will say, because of the fact that, you know, you're thinking of that most likely outcome rather than the average outcome. And if you looked at the most likely outcome for every team, it's probably more than 41. It surely is more than 41 wins on average for that reason. So everyone kind of has to get shifted down when you're actually projecting it so that there's only going to be 41 wins per team, as we know that there has to be.
He's Kevin Pelton. He'll bust all of my optimism as we continue next on Locked On Jazz. More coming with Kevin Pelton in just a second, but Locked On Jazz listeners, I want to thank you. You have done it again with your support of one of our sponsors. Intercap Lending started advertising with us a year ago. They had two branches. They now have 11. They are an absolutely, and we actually did our refinance with them. They are local. Largest independent lending company out there. They'll service your own loan, long-term relationship, better for the customer. The best sign you can have about what Intercap Lending does is that real estate agents are sending people to Intercap. Why? Because Intercap closes. They get things done. That's all an agent wants. If you don't close, they don't get any work. So absolutely why you want to use Intercap Lending. No overlays, no additional requirements. Direct lender, they can get difficult loans done. And if you have multiple properties, they can take a look. Use their app. It's absolutely terrific. The Intercap Lending app in the App Store. And give Steve Carter a call. He'll help you out specifically. 385-800-8528. Steve helped me through my loan process and was great. 385-800-8528. That's 385-800-8528. The market's insane. You can pre-qualify with that app. Let Intercap get you through the system. Intercap Lending, NMLS, 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. That's Steve Carter, 385-800-8528. All right, so, Kevin, I'm very uncomfortable, as I said. I'm very optimistic. And then I try to run through all my Peltonisms. So let's take the Jazz close the year with that incredible run. And every time I think about how great the Jazz were to close the year, I'm reminded that the first 20 games of the year are a far better indicator than the last 20 games of the year in when you project a team for the playoffs and even for their upcoming season. How much validity can I give the Jazz closing stretch, and does it change because it was a 40 game run, not a 20 game run?
I think it does a little. I mean, I think that the last 20 games versus the first 20 games, I think that's mostly just about the fact that, you know, teams are tanking in that stretch. And then, you know, teams also, when you're looking at, you know, when you're looking at it from playoff terms, well, you have a lot of top seeds that are already kind of locked into where they're going to be and coast into the playoffs without, you know, playing their guys in the last handful of games. And I think, you know, that's why that stat in particular comes out the way it does. In general, I think it's just mostly that, you know, people tend to view the second half of the season as more predictive than the first half when they're thinking ahead to the next year. And in reality, they're both equally predictive in practice. And I mean, this is something that we've seen with the Jazz a few years ago when they had that strong stretch again after the trade deadline, after the Enes Kanter trade and Gobert moving into the starting lineup. And I think there were, you know, widespread expectations that was going to translate into a playoff spot the next year. And while the Jazz were, I believe, an above 500 team that following year, they just missed out on the playoffs.
Jazz defensive rating for the final 40 games of the year was like 4 points better than anyone else in the league. unsustainable or a sign of just utter dominance?
I think unsustainable. I mean, you know, that's one of the interesting things looking at the RPM projection. They do have the best defensive projection in the league, as you'd expect, but it's not dramatically ahead of anyone else. It's, you know, a 1.4 point per 100 possessions gap. So you're giving up kind of two-thirds of that difference that you saw after the trade deadline or in the second half.
And why not? Just for all the same reasons, or just when you stretch out a sample size, you don't believe that can be the case?
Yeah, I mean, the larger the sample size, the harder it is going to be to stay dramatically better than everyone else, the more you're going to be pulled back towards the league average. And, you know, when you specifically dig into it, it is often a lot of those factors, like the opponent, you know, you were getting some good fortune on opponent shooting, which isn't really, you know, that controllable by defenses. And, you know, you're going to see a factor like that start to even out. And then the other thing would probably be health. Again, as we mentioned, Gobert healthy throughout that stretch. Even though it's not necessarily likely that he'll miss an extended period of time that he did in the first half of the season, he's probably not going to play all 82 games next year.
So knowing all these pieces, I decided to go try to analyze the Jazz pre-January 18th, and actually really pre-February 8th, which was the trade when the trades went down. And what jumped out to me was that if you eliminated – first of all, up to February, the Jazz had three players on the roster that were negative plus minus. Rodney Hood, Joe Johnson, and Ricky Rubio is minus 0.3. So the first thing is I looked at Ricky Rubio's minutes when he was not on the floor with Joe Johnson and not on the floor with Rodney Hood, and he was plus 5.5. And when he was on the floor with the two of those, he was minus 26.3.
Oh, boy.
26.3 in 140 some odd minutes. 142 minutes, I think it was. Now I start to go look around and I realize that if I take Rodney Hood and Joe Johnson off the floor in the first half of the season, every player on the roster is positive. And not only are they positive, they're like really positive. And I went big man combinations just kind of as a crux to look at everything. Favors and Gobert were plus 7 with a defensive rating of 97. Better than it was in the final part of the season. Gobert and Jonas were plus 7. Favors and Tabo were plus 7. Favors and Jonas were plus 9. What about the fact that if I eliminate Rodney Hood and Joe Johnson, one of which was getting old and the other that seems to have not been very engaged if he has a 107 defensive rating, what does that tell you about the prospects to the upcoming season? Because to me, that's the item that's given me the most optimism is, wait a sec, all these things about the second half of the season and being a bad indicator, if I just remove these two guys, suddenly it's not a 40-game run, it's an 80-game run.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, probably that there is that same element where the extremes between how well the team played without those guys and how poorly they played with them, or probably also themselves, if you dug into it, there'd probably be some indicators where, you know, teams shot a much higher percentage on threes or on jumpers with Rodney Hood on the court. I mean, Joe Johnson is probably more consistent with what we know about his game from his box score stats, you know, his individual level stats. But, you know, I think that, again, it's probably one of those things that would have evened out to some extent over the course of the year. But, you know, addition by subtraction is a real thing in the NBA. And, you know, sometimes it's almost better to be a decent team with these huge glaring weaknesses in your rotation than a decent team with everyone being pretty similar in your rotation, because it creates the opportunity for, you know, improvement in those spots, whereas it's going to be much harder to improve on a bunch of average players. And you know, I think the Jazz did benefit from that. Now, one of the other things you find, of course, is that other teams have the ability to address those weaknesses on their own lineups over the off season more easily than they can do within the season. So, you know, maybe there's another team with that similar kind of, you know, minus 18 guy that's no longer going to be in the rotation next year. And that's probably part of what pulls everyone towards the middle the following season.
All right. Final one on this that I'm not entirely sure how to deal with. And that is Jay Crowder Rudy Gobert together on the floor. Derek Favors off. So now Jay Crowder is definitely the four, right?
Yep.
Offensive rating 109, defensive rating 91, plus 18, 435 minutes. What do I do with that?
Yeah, interesting. I'm sure you saw that Ben Falk wrote earlier this week on Cleaning the Glass about, you know, the RPM machines that he had looked at prior to the 2017-18 season, and Crowder was one of those guys, as was Ricky Rubio, and pointed out that, you know, the success of not the Gobert-Crowder lineup combo, but the entire lineup with Crowder in place of Derek Favors alongside the other starters, and noted, you know, that the huge net rating on that lineup, and that there was nothing obviously fluky in the shooting splits against that lineup. I mean, you know, it's going to be pretty much impossible to sustain a 91 defensive rating over an extended period of time. I mean, that's just not something we've seen in the modern NBA. Is efficient enough offensively as teams generally are now. But I mean, you look at that on paper. If you're a Jay Crowder believer, as I am, and you know, that's kind of the in my mind, the ideal front court is you have this dominant defensive center who allows you to cover up for some of the weaknesses of playing a smaller player at the power forward, who brings you that stretch option on offense. I'm going to go back to like Dwight Howard and Rashard Lewis in Orlando when the Magic were getting to the finals and threatened the Eastern Conference. And that to me has always kind of been like the platonic ideal of what a front court combination should be. And Crowder and Gobert do seem to fit into that.
He's Kevin Pelton. More discussion with him in the last on Locked On NBA about all of the NBA stuff. But thank you very much. Well, did you quell my optimism, or am I still as optimistic? I don't
feel like I necessarily did.
Yeah. All right. I'm gonna stay as optimistic as I am. Let's go. Let's tip it off. Let's go. Here, NBA season, come now. Special thanks to Kevin Pelton for taking the time with us on Locked On Jazz. A nice little treat to have the national guest. Interview series will continue with somebody else later this week. And pack ratings are coming here pretty soon. I got to work on them and get them done. Start sitting down with players. We'll have player interviews coming your direction shortly in later September as well. So exciting times for Jazz fans. Hope you're doing well. Thanks very much for tuning in to Locked On Jazz.